Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, your tray table is in an upright and locked position, and that you are ready to get weird and think different. Please prepare for takeoff. Wednesday. It is September 1st, and we are back with another episode of Destination Different. Huge show this week. Big guest, big excitement, big as we enter the final stages of 2021. So if you've been listening to the show for the last couple weeks, you know we've been kind of in this lull of summer. We've been hunting guests. It's, you know, I've been a little, I don't want to say down in the dumps, but it's a grind. It's been slow moving over the course of the summer, trying to keep things moving, been busy at work, been trying to keep this podcast afloat, and I don't know if I've been giving it the energy and attention that it deserves. And this week's guest has me excited, has me hyped up to carry this thing into the last 4 months of 2021. I love that it's September 1st. I love that we have 4 months left in the year to ramp Destination Different up. So our guest on this week's show is none other than Mikey Fowler. He is the executive producer of podcasts of audio at Barstool Sports. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but Mikey joined the pirate ship in 2016, where he came over from Fox Sports working on Colin Cowherd's show. Again, not bad company to keep. And when he came over to Barstool, they had 5 total podcasts. In the 4 years that he has worked at Barstool, they've taken that number way up. Dozens of podcasts now, millions and millions of streams, downloads every single month on their podcast network. He launched Barstool Radio. He has been and had his hand in every single major talent that has come through the Barstool pipeline. And as a guy who generally operates behind the camera, not on air, it was great to get the chance to hear his story and hear about how he, one, got to Barstool, how he's grown their audio network like crazy. And obviously we talked a lot of Barstool pieces, but we also, I got the chance to hear about him, you know, as a writer and what he loves as a writer, what inspires him to be creative, what he looks for in creative hires, what he's looking for in weird brains. And all of that was fascinating, and we got to kind of pack it into an hour-long show here today. So without further ado, I don't want to belabor the point here. We have an unbelievable episode. I hope you enjoy this week's Destination Different with Mikey Fowler of Barstool Sports. Let's go. You here, you can come work for Destination Different, but we'll see how that goes. All right, now my first real question.
Yes, let's hear it.
Did you steal the merch?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The thing is, I took the beating for the entire underrepresented, underpaid producer side of the company. All we did was steal merch for 3 years. Every time we'd work too late, we'd leave with a sweatshirt as compensation. And then one dickhead editor decided to do that. And I have not talked to him since, and I hope that he gets fired one day.
Wow. Okay. When the first thing that you search Mikey Fowler on Google, Mikey Fowler stealing, Michael Fowler steal.
Like, it's one sweatshirt, man. Yeah. I mean, I tell you, everything I wear is from Barcelona. It was all taken the same way. Everyone does it. Everyone did it. And I'm just the one who wears the scarlet letter around here.
We got the brunt of it. Well, that happens. I mean, has being part of the Barstool universe, like, has that become norm at this point now, where the cameras always being rolling? And like, is that just like, you don't even notice it at this point?
For in 4 years of being there, for that to be the only thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember going on radio that day when Dave was about to yell at me, I'm doing air quotes, he had this big smirk on his face during the commercial. Like, we all know it wasn't a big deal and we were playing it up, but yeah. I had a tough couple of days. I didn't even go. That was the night of the holiday party when the video came out, and I just skipped it. I was like, fuck this. I'm not doing this. It's for that to be the only piece of content I've ever been involved in a negative way. I'm extremely happy about that.
Yeah.
All the guys around me, like all my best friends are known for far worse. So I'm very fine with what I have.
Do you purposely try and like avoid the cameras at this point? Is there any part of you that says I'd love to have my own show someday or be kind of on the other side of the camera? Like, is that in your mind?
So Erica, I work directly for Erica Nardini and I have for 4 years. We have a really good relationship at this point. And I've heard her say the same thing in 100 other meetings. Like, I think he's a good producer, but I think he wants to be something else. I think he's a good producer, but I think he wants to be content. I don't think he's here to do this. I don't think he's here to do that. And if you just want to work at Barstool and you want to have as blessed of an opportunity as I do, you got to understand your limitations and not be like, hey, I'm friends with Rowan and Caleb. Maybe I can do something with them. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to understand that they are talented people, maybe the most talented people that you'll ever come across professionally, and that they're being nice to you because you're a good guy and not because they think you're a talented individual. You need to understand your limitations. And I think I'm at the point in my career now where I know my role with these people, and helping them succeed is all I kind of care about at this point. So the answer to your question is absolutely not.
You stay as far away.
Get me out.
You've got your swim lanes and you know where to play at this point.
Yeah. I mean, you must know that kind of person, you know, the guy who like wants to work somewhere and like, I want to do something. And then eventually you're like, oh, you really didn't want to do that. You just thought you could get a foot in the door and get noticed to do something else. That guy's annoying.
Yeah.
That guy sucks.
It's true. It's very true. Every single company has somebody along those lines.
And that guy sucks.
Yeah. So I'm sure you get this question all the time, literally all the time, but how, like, let's go back to the beginning a little bit, but like, how did you get your foot in the door? How did you get this job at Barstool? Cause, you know, I want to talk more about this. Podcasting has not been around for that long. Like, you know, radio, obviously audio formats as creatively, but like building a podcast network is not something that just like existed 15 years ago. So how did you, what was your background and how did you, get your way in the door to be able to start to, grow into this role?
There are so many different starting points to this story, right? So there's way back in college when I decided to take a couple summers in the islands, like Virgin Islands, which led my advisor to give my name to somebody who thought I would move to LA. I did move to LA, but let's answer one question at a time. So the one about joining Barstool started when I was in Los Angeles and I was a freelance writer. And I loved writing. I thought I was going to be a writer my entire life. I was pitching and, sending pitch emails. And at the bottom, I noticed I'd have to link like 5 or 6 times, to different articles. So I put them all together, made a bio, theopenfield.com/my name. And I made a nice little thing where if you click it, it was just my picture, my bio, and then all my work. I reached out to other freelancers in LA. I said, hey, just send me your work when it's done. Mm-hmm. I'll make this page for you. Eventually we got up to like 26 different writers. Bobby being one of them, our mutual friend. Mm-hmm. And eventually that got the attention of Fox Sports, who brought me on to be a writer for them. They pivoted to video, as everybody knows famously.
Yeah.
I found myself in the Fox Sports radio world, working for Colin Cowherd and for Fox Sports Radio. And then one thing led to another. Portnoy found out who I was, offered to move me to New York to run his podcast network, which at the time was only 5 shows. And he said, just grow it. That was the only thing he told me. He said, just grow the network however you can. And I took over at 5. And now looking back, like, I was handed something that I didn't really understand. I didn't really know anything about audio. Since then, I've gotten an audio engineering degree. I've worked my ass off to understand the space. But yeah, I fell ass backwards into a job that I had no experience doing, as most people do. But yeah, at Barstool, it's just kind of like I got an opportunity. And I just decided to like run with it and learn as much as I could, as fast as I could before they noticed I didn't know anything. And
yeah,
within a couple months I was actually good at it. So, yeah, long story short, Barstool, found me through Colin Cowherd in LA.
That's a good place, an interesting place to get poached from too. was it like a debate in your mind of like, oh, like I got this pretty good gig at Colin Cowherd, or like, this is the easiest decision I've ever made in my life.
It was not really that hard. I was looking for change. Whether that be personally or professionally, not that I was unhappy, but I've never really lived anywhere more than 2.5-3 years in my entire life. And I saw the opportunity. And then when Dave called, it was just like literally, yeah, no brainer. It was a Thursday and I was gone by Sunday. I'm from Boston area. So Portnoy was always like, running something that I felt was very funny and interesting. And as you know, I'm sure you're the same way, like sinking 15, 16 hours a day in your early 20s into a job there's nowhere better to do that than somewhere you believe in, actually. So yeah, I took the opportunity and ran with it.
Yeah. Do you find that that's, that happens a lot where you, you, I mean, maybe other colleagues at Barstool where it's fan first, and then, you know, you kind of find your way into being an employee. Like, how do you sort of manage that, those two sides of things? Cause I imagine you're still a fan of, you know, people you work with, or, you know, colleagues that you are just consuming their content. Like, how do you manage both sides of that?
There's people who want to work in media, and then there's people who want to work for somewhere that they like. Mm-hmm. And like, there's a huge difference. And I think if you're going to be successful anywhere or make a career anywhere, you got to be a fan of what you guys are doing. Nobody likes to sell tickets to a sporting event when they don't even like the sport. Nobody wants to sell something they don't like or work in something they don't like. Like, I mean, are you a fan of what you do and where your company and what you guys believe in? Like, that helps you do whatever you're doing. You're clearly a fan of putting on, like, doing this kind of media. So you do it. And this just happened to offer itself as a full-time job. Like, I would have been, I would have worked for Dave for half of what he was paying me at the time. Like, I just really, really do not clip that part. But I absolutely
not his pay. He's, you know, we're gonna take him down.
Thank you, Mikey, for doing this interview. We now cut our salary. No, I think you have to be a fan of anywhere you work in order to be successful at it. And it just so happened that the person that I was reading as a kid wanted me to work for him. So he doesn't know that. He really doesn't know that, but I think I think from this point forward, I'll never work anywhere I'm not a fan of. And I really do believe that.
Yeah. And like, I don't know how old you are, but I'm at, you know, you get in the door 4 years ago, you know, it's five shows. You're coming off of, you know, in a role that you probably don't really know exactly what you're supposed to do. Like, what was step one? Like, where did you even begin? Like, how were those early days for you just getting up and running?
Taking phone calls, calling people in the industry, having conversations with them and asking them what the fuck is going on. I had made a lot of friends in LA that were in similar roles. So I was just calling them being like, what do we do here? And, you know, at the beginning, it was like putting holes in a ship that was sinking, just trying to keep it afloat. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you keep it afloat long enough that your talent grow you. And I remember getting told by the guys at Fox Sports when I was leaving, they were like, that's a great gig. It's going to grow no matter what. And I was like, I don't know if that's true. And he's like, they're like, yeah, it's going to grow no matter what. Like, just keep it afloat. The first thing I did was like, how are we selling these? What do we want to improve? Erica, what are your objectives for me? And then just being resourceful. I think you could probably attest to it with like, you're almost at 100 episodes of the show.
Yeah.
How did you first learn how to do it?
Right. Like,
you figured Googled it.
Yeah. Like, Google fucked around with shit until something works.
Right. Like, all the way back to when I was talking about the freelance thing, it took me 3 days to learn how to connect my WordPress CMS to the front end of the website on HostGator. I just was like fucking stumped. Like, I was like, I had no idea how to do it. I think that resourcefulness is pretty much the only thing you need in your early 20s. The ability to like figure it out on your own, just using the internet, using whatever you have. And that's kind of what I did. I just kind of like talked to the right people, searched the right shit, and eventually figured out how to do it. And then, and then just being around people like Erica, where, you know, early days, she's like, you're doing too much of this. Your job is this. I can find anybody to do this. I need you to do this. And she was just an amazing help. Consider her to be pretty much my backbone at this point. And, you know, you blink one day and you're good at something, but in the beginning, you're really not. So I would say that I was super underqualified and I just was resourceful. Just tried to figure it out. Just learn how to search the right words on
right. Google. Honestly, it is like, it should be a taught skill in like elementary grade school. Like, that is the most important thing you can learn how to do.
Be resourceful, be independent, like just like have an idea and figure it out. And that's why engineers are such twats, because it's like, you know how to do it. And I know that I need you to do it. And they don't need to know how the concept works. They just need to know how to build it. So yeah, and again, I have told them that many times, but the idea is like, if you just know how to do something, like if you don't know how to do something, there's a way to figure it out without asking for help or going to your boss and be like, I don't know how to do it. Don't do that.
Right. Not really. Was there a moment where like the switch flipped and you're like, oh shit, I've got something here. Or I'm good at this. Or I've started to figure out what is this role I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. So, what was I at the age? I was 25. I'm 29 now. When I was like, you know, 26, 27, and we were 2 years in, scaling is the most important thing for us at that point. We were growing way too fast. We had Caller Daddy. We were starting to really, really grow, and we were climbing up that chart. And Erica's like, what do we need? I'm like, a guest booker, six producers. We need this. We need PR. We need a new data analyst. We need all this stuff. And then you just start taking meetings and interviewing. And I'll tell you that one of those days when there was nothing going on, like I was sitting there and everyone was working and I was like, there's nothing happening right now, is the first day that I realized like my job was to do that. My job wasn't to be the guy that's working 18 hours a day, producing six different shows. That's what Erica used to tell me. If I see you producing one more thing, I'm going to fire you. She's like, I need you to build this, scale it. And that's a weird thing, because sometimes you feel like you're not doing anything. But the day that I realized that I could sit back and things were humming along is the day that I realized that, like, oh, we actually did something good here. We did something great here, honestly. So it's a weird thing to say, but the day that I realized I had nothing to do one day was the day that I realized we did it successfully.
I mean, I know you're a soccer guy, so you're like the technical director. You're putting people in the right place. You're pulling the players where they need to go, making sure things happen that
way. It's the day when Messi can sit on the bench and they still run a 4-0. Like, I'm never going to compare myself to Lionel Messi again. That was the worst idea in the world. It's the day that Arsene Wenger doesn't come to the game, or Arsene Wenger gets a red card the game before and he doesn't coach the next one and they still win.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I want to say. We're going to scrap the other one.
So those early days, were you literally, you were the team, you were one man team, like just producing every show. Are you like, and this may be too granular, but are you literally editing the show, cutting it together, adding music? Like, is that what was your job description or part of what you were doing at the time?
Part of it, but part of it was never independent, first of all. So there's guys like in the tech side, my friend Andrew, who, when we launched Barstool Radio and we had no plan, he was my board op while I was the lead producer for 12 straight hours for 6 months. And like, then there's guys like, you know, Brendan Clancy was running the KFC radio show. Hank was always doing Pardon My Take independently. My job was just to support the people that were already existing, listening to everything, making quote cards, making video assets, recording new shows. So like, still to this day, when we bring a new show in, my job is to produce it for a couple of weeks, cutting it, making the assets, learning what the job is before I hire somebody and then move them in. So in the early days, it was a lot of like, first one in, last one out, do 18 hours, listen to everything, make sure everyone's going right, and do what you would do. But the better you get at being in my role is the less you do of that. So I would say, like, in the beginning, it felt like I was on my own, but there was no physical way that I was ever going to be on my own. Like, there was always enough help.
Yeah.
Like, but there was definitely no, like, there was no managerial role. Nobody really knew what the space was. Nobody knew how to talk to Apple or Spotify. We didn't have reps or anything like that. So it was like,
Just figure that piece of it out. How was that for you? Obviously being a, you know, 25, 26 year old kid, and you're starting to build out a team. Like, what was that? I always like asking people who are in the creative space, like, how did you know what to look for? Like, who are the types of people that you're pulling? And what was that like for you going out and like building this team around you?
Weird, super weird and uncomfortable, because I was like 3 years removed from crying, making 50K, getting in the door at Fox. Like, and now that Dave's handing me an opportunity to find a guest booker and like to find these people that are going to change this company. And it's like, I did not know what the fuck I was doing. I felt super uncomfortable being in a role like that. I felt, my interviews are so weird. I'm so bad at interviewing. I mean, you're clearly great at it, but it's like, do you understand when you were in the beginning, how much better you've gotten?
Like, oh yeah. It's like, I listen to some of like first, second, third episodes. It's disgusting. It like makes me want to puke all over myself.
Yeah, dude. And like that, like if you had heard my early interviews, I was just like, so like what's up? Like, how's Barstool? Like, what do you like about Barstool? Like, are you going to quit when you read a bad article? Like all this stupid shit. And like, in general, what we do, I'm lucky that what we look for is weird brains. Like in general, like college dropouts, kids that worked at NASA, data analysts from Canada that have like mild autism. Like they are some of the funniest people in the world. And they you know it when you feel it, like when they're in the room and you see what they can create and you're like, how did you make that? And they don't really know how to explain it. You're like, just come on board, like figure it
you're
out.
We'll find a spot for you.
Exactly. And like, those are the people that built the backbone of the company before me. So I think I kind of had a nice little, like, if it was my own company, it would have been hard to kind of pick my ideal brain. Mm-hmm. But because Barstool had its reputation as the weirdest place in America, I was able to like know it when I saw it. And it's mm-hmm. a really weird thing. Gaz is great at it, the best in the business at it. He says that like, you just know, like mm-hmm. you somebody makes you laugh or they don't.
Yeah.
Like it takes 1 second. So I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of the type of brain that we have. And everybody kind of reflects that. That's why we all hang out every weekend.
Yeah.
Like it's really funny. It's a little weird cult, but I'm very happy with the team.
Yeah. And so like that is, you know, is there part of you now as you have, you know, your role has evolved, are you looking for audio talent? Are you still really just focused on like who is making, building, producing, editing the show? Or are you talent. Like, you're looking everywhere?
We're looking at what we don't have.
Yeah.
I think we have so much of the good stuff. And like, take a show like $1 Million Worth of Game, for example.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, the funniest and most influential African-American podcast in the space, the guests speak for themselves, from Durant to 21 Savage yesterday. Like mm-hmm. they get the guys. And to find something like that, like Roan tells me, there's a guy in Philly that I really like. He was in jail for 20 years. Can you go the day after Thanksgiving and go to their live show? And I go to their live show and like the only white guy, I'm wearing a tie-dye hoodie, the one I stole. It was the day after the one I stole. And I'm sitting there like these guys are fucking hilarious. They pull mm-hmm. me on stage, say, hey, Barstool's in the building, whatever. I remember thinking like, this is what I want to do. I want to find talent. I want to be the person that, you know, looks for something weird and different. Mm-hmm. Anybody can find another Patriots show or like another like Bruins podcast. It's
right.
Like, what I focus on now is making sure our relationships with Apple and Spotify and Pandora and Amazon are all good, making sure the producers are doing their job, and then looking for things we don't have. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for probably a year and a half. And I think it's where I'm most comfortable. Also, it's a lot of research. So you just sit there and just like Googling shit all day, looking at the top charts all day.
Yeah.
So
like, are you just listening to other podcasts constantly?
I'm pretty much listening to ours most of the day.
Yeah.
And then like, when I get that 4 o'clock and I finish the last show of the day, I spend maybe 3 hours just like looking for something interesting to listen to. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the night, I go back to my like Shane Gillis. But like for those like 4 to 7 hours, I'm pretty much looking for a podcast that we don't have. Or, you know, for example, like the Barstool Athlete Space.
Yeah.
Like nobody knows what the fuck that is. We just created it. And Dave's like, you're an athlete. Go mm-hmm. like run it. Go ahead. Now I'm thinking like, how can we make this a podcast network mm-hmm. or like a JV platform or like a AAA system? Like, it's just, I used to tell people this at like at Coward, you can be as creative as you want inside the box. That Barstool, like there's no box.
Yeah. There's just no
like
rules.
Whatever you want to do, you go to Erica and you're like, I have this idea. By the time you're like halfway done with the idea, she's just like, just try it. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, here's 2 million. If it costs 3, then no. If it costs 2 and makes us 3, you can keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most simple company in the world.
Yeah.
If you have an idea, if you have a talent that's worth $500,000 a year and he makes you 2 million, he'll stay. If you have a talent that's worth $500,000, you can't sell him. He got 6 months and he's gone.
Mm-hmm. It's
very, very simple.
Keeps it easy.
It does.
It really does. I mean, it's like, if I'm sure it makes your job, like, listen, the numbers tell what the numbers tell. Like it's.
You go to your sales team and you're like, why isn't he selling? And they tell you why. And then you go to your talent. You're like, can you fix this? And if they're like, no, then you're like, they're not going to work. Mm-hmm. Like it's, or you go to your sales team, it's not going to fix it. Can you still do it? Like there's just, I just walk up and down the stairs all day going to the sales on the third floor, down to the talent on the second floor, and just trying to make things money.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah. But like, I don't know, the job's hard. And there's a really easy way to explain it. I tell Bobby this all the time. It's like, there's a level of comfort knowing that you're doing something that you don't know how to explain mm-hmm. because everyone at the company, I trust and I believe that Erica and everybody knows exactly what I'm doing and what I'm worth to them, but I don't know how they would fill it or what it would cost to fill it.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's like a level of comfort that's just like, yeah, I'm going to keep working really hard because I really like this place. And also I'm not scared of you letting me go because it would take 6 months to train somebody else. So it's like, I don't know. Everything about this job is unique and weird, but 4 years later, I'm very comfortable knowing my role here. And it's brought me a lot of personal peace and stuff like that. I used to, you know, the feeling when like you go to work and you see somebody and you're like, your pits, like your stomach hurts. And like, yep. You're like, yep. I like that. I haven't had that 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a bad Sunday night. Like that's the kind of stuff that I forgot about. And when this whole party's over, I'm going to, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. I hope I have enough saved up to get the hell out of America or go to Alaska or something.
Go back to the islands.
Like do something. Like I don't know if I could physically do that anymore, but I had those days. Like when I was freelance writing in LA, I was managing a soccer facility for $30,000 a year. I moved to LA for $30,000 a year to run a soccer center.
Not for a writing gig.
No, I had to freelance on the side, which eventually got me fired because he was like, you're just writing. Like, this is not making me money. And I'm like, okay. But like, I whenever I saw that guy, I remember having like a visceral reaction, like a physical pain. And I was like, this cannot go on. Like, this absolutely needs to be done. But yeah, like, I don't know. You know the feeling. I'm sure you've had it before.
Yeah, there are people I run into on a daily basis. I'm like, oh, I just
can't do it.
Yeah.
Oh, and one of them is probably Bobby.
It's true. He keeps me coming back. Is there anything now, obviously you've been in the space for 4 or 5 years. Like, is there anything that still really excites you or new elements in the space that you're like, oh, this is the next thing. This is what I want to start pushing on.
I love how the platforms are still trying ideas that are clear, that I know are going to fail. Like for example, when Clubhouse popped, everyone was back into the live audio space. And it's like radio still holds like a 60% market share in audio consumption. And everyone believes this podcasting bubble is like a bubble. And it's like, if you think about the way you consume media and how we're going to age up and how the people below us are consuming media, this is only going to get bigger. So when a Clubhouse idea comes out and then Spotify replicates it with Green Room and like other platforms, NDAs be damned, are working on these things. It makes me excited to know that in my head, I'm like, these are going to fail because I know that they're still like trying ideas, which makes me think like I have value in the space because like I can tell you right now, this isn't going to
work. Not going to work. Yeah.
Right. And it's like, that excites me because that makes me feel like there's something for me to contribute at a platform level, not just a network level. Cause everybody goes network to platform. So like the next dream is like, where do you go? Like, who are you going to tie on to? And like the idea, the fact that I know that there's people in those rooms making decisions that don't know what I know excites the shit out of me. And audio is such a weird space, as you know, since you're doing this, like you saw an opportunity. How long ago was 100 episodes?
So it's like almost exactly 2 years ago, October 1 of 2019. So
it's so early.
Yeah.
That's so early. And there were probably only like what, 700,000 or so podcasts that time. And now there's, you know, it's growing times four every year. And it's like, everybody's late to the space or new to the space or wondering how to get audience or wondering about this. The idea that nobody knows what the fuck is going on genuinely excites me. That's the most exciting thing in the world, is that I'm in a medium, in a space that's still finding its identity. And if I continue to be where I am, I can be a player in this. And if podcasting becomes the next fucking whatever, like, you know, we're pretty good. We're pretty well endowed at that.
Pretty like well cemented in that space.
Yeah.
What do you think about these platforms now, like paying out the ass for talent, like with Spotify exclusive or, you know, Apple, every platform is like, you know, doing the same thing. Like, I imagine you have thoughts on that model.
So question for you, back on you in the same exact idea.
Yeah.
Have you looked into subscription services that these platforms are rolling out?
I've loosely looked into, like, Apple is just the, like, that's where I get the most of my listens. Like, and so I've loosely looked into that.
Okay. And Patreon was never an idea for you?
Patreon, I actually know somebody who like used to work at Patreon. So I've like explored that, but I'm like, I'm always at a point where I'm like, I don't have enough of a following where I feel like I'm going to get enough value out of this. I'm like, okay, right. So what? My mom and my cousin and my aunt are like the, you know, my subscribers. And is that worth it to collect the $15 to like piss off a bunch of other people?
Yeah, I get that. But like, here's the thing. It's like, I asked that question because what is a podcast worth is a very interesting question. I don't think Spotify is going to make the money. Well, I know they're not going to make the money directly on Alex Cooper. They're not going to make, I mean, that's clearly on my brain when you say that question, because we just lost her. But I think that there's a couple ways people are spending money. I think Spotify has a huge, huge advantage on Apple because what they decided to do was buy the infrastructure. That early Anchor deal, that Wondery deal for the producers, the Gimlet deal are all pipe deals. They're all building the back end, the pipe side. Apple kind of just relied on default and being like, we are everybody's. And they lost.
I think they've been just stupid through this. Stupid. So, like so they bad. Just have kind of been like turned a blind eye to it.
Some of my best friends that work there, Steve and guys like that, have all jumped and gone to platform side. And it's like the writing is pretty clear about who has the better plan, but Spotify still doesn't have the market share they want. So what they're doing is they're spending this money on podcasts and podcast networks to try to bring the market share in and relying on exclusivity. The Rogan article on The Verge the other day was about how he's losing influence because of his lack of distribution. So that's the next step of this is this worth it? We're trying to build models on our end about going subscription. Like, will this be, would we lose our influence? Would we make the money? Would this, would that? That's, I don't have the answers, but I believe that in that what Spotify's doing in making their user app. Remember the Apple update the other day?
Yeah.
Just completely fucked everybody.
Right.
Like they shut off auto downloads and everyone dropped 30% and then advertisers got pissed and it's like, well, it's Apple's fault.
Yeah.
Like there's another argument to be had about should that have even been a thing on in the first place. But like, I think that the platforms that are spending the money on talent exclusivity, I don't think it's a great idea. I don't know if you remember the Luminary. Do you remember Luminary?
Yep. Luminary. Yep.
What a disaster. Mm-hmm. They didn't, they like ingested Apple's free catalog and then used it to push subscription. And us and Rogan were the first two that were like, get us off of your subscription service. You're using us to drive pushes to your paid model.
Right.
And like, if you just, I don't know if there's a way, I think there's a way to do it, but I don't think anybody's playing the game the right way. And I think, do you agree with that? I think that like Spotify isn't going to take over the podcast space by buying Alex Cooper and Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
They're just going to get a,
Where I see it is like, you know, we're in a, like the talent is yes, they're a podcast is like so interesting because yes, it is a podcast. It's an audio format. You listen to it on Spotify, audio, you know, Apple, whatever. But there are so many other pieces that go into it. It's this like it's this Instagram, it's a TikTok, it's the website, it's the live tour, it's the merch, it's like all the extra shit that goes that surrounds the podcast. And it's like, yeah, okay, you're exclusive to Spotify, but all these other things aren't exclusive to Spotify. So I think that's where it like gets really muddy with podcasting. Is like it's not just one stop destination where you turn on ESPN and like that's where it lives. It's
right.
Different.
So like, for example, like, did you see a download decrease in quarantine?
Yep. At the start, but then I like, you hit a certain moment where it was like, what the fuck? Everything's through the roof.
And you're video distributing, aren't you?
Like I do clips. I don't do like full YouTube right. like episodes or anything, but.
So YouTube saved our podcast industry or our company, because we lost so many downloads on the commute stopping. Cause you got to think about like, we had 52 million downloads, not unique, but total downloads a month. Mm-hmm. That got cut to like 31. And then we just started putting full episodes on YouTube and telling our sales team to sell them one-to-one. Mm-hmm. And that saved our ass because people started to watch things during quarantine. So yeah. You like the adaptability of the podcast industry is super, super interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And that if you're in a role like mine, if I'm in radio, like I just got to throw my hands up and be like, well, we're going to take a hit this month. Like in podcasting, you're allowed to sit in a table where Erica goes, what are we doing? And then you're like, okay, I have to do that. Like podcasting is so versatile and fluid. Like the word podcast really doesn't mean shit. Mm-hmm. An RSS feed is primitive and basic code.
Right.
Like Spotify buying the rights to distribute the audio for Alex Cooper means nothing when we're going to be selling her liquor. Like we're going to be coming out with a Pink Whitney Caller Daddy thing. And like, we're going to be making twice as much as they make directly on the market share. So it's like, what does owning Alex Cooper mean? What does owning Joe Rogan mean?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think the platforms are doing it right. So to answer your question in a million words, I don't understand why people are spending the money on the exclusivity parts when there's apps that have problems. I think Apple should be spending on how to fix the fucking app.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I like to your point of being early. Like, I think we're still just at the like nascent stage of
not
the
even
podcast.
Close.
Like, it's like, we're not like, it is just starting to, it's got a long way to go still in front of us.
Like think about a podcast network, a good friend of mine, Riley, who runs Blue Wire Podcast Network. Mm-hmm. His goal is not to be the biggest podcast network in the country. His goal is to gobble up all these regional shows, get like 2,000-3,000 listeners per these little shows in dedicated markets, like a Bengals podcast or a Bucks podcast, and then accumulate 40 of them through these deals and then sell that for $3 million to Spotify and then go do something else.
Yeah.
Like he understands that the space is so young that he can just run a concept and then sell it. And right. I think that these platforms are getting taken to the friggin' cleaners. Like, I don't know what they're worth anymore, but I know what people are paying. And I know that it's crazy. If I had the balls to get out of Barstool, which I never would, I think it'd be very easy to run a podcast network and get it to a point to sell. I don't think that's a hard thing at all.
I mean, is that going to be the Barstool Athletes new concept? Is just make a college show from every single university in the entire country?
I wish I had an answer for you. I really don't know what the Barstool Podcast Network is going to look like in 6 months. I know that there's interest. I know that there's some big name talent. But fuck if I know. And that's the most exciting part of this whole thing is like, it's like I go to work every day and I trust that Dave, Gaz, Erica, my boss, Jen are all going to get the rest of the stuff done. And then they let me just brainstorm and think. And it's truly, truly, truly special. Nobody has any idea what I do at this company, like at all. Like you could sit next to me and know everything I'm doing, but like, as you have to realize there's less than 300 people in the country who understand the space as well as people who are actually in it. And podcasting is all about like just relationships and who you know and how it's formatted and like just like any other industry. And at Barstool, Erica and Dave are just like, what's going on here? Why is my episode taking 20 minutes to upload? It's like what do you want from me? I don't know. The industry's so young that I really don't know what's next. But if I was a Spotify, I'd be spending money differently than they are. $60 million for Cooper is, I mean, she's worth every penny. Her numbers are disgusting. She's like the seventh biggest podcast network on her own. But what's that worth? I don't know. It's worth a lot in ad sales, but Spotify's not going to be selling ads into it.
So. Right.
Who knows?
It's like, so you mentioned like you just get, you know, nobody can explain what you do. It's, you know, ambiguous. Is there, I guess my question is like, you know, have you always been, obviously you said you always thought you were going to be a writer. Like, have you always sort of been creative and like in this creative space or wanting to be in this creative space in one way, shape or form?
For sure. I mean, you definitely have too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like what you do, where you are now and what you do with this podcast is all about the opportunity to create something. And I think like, if you strip everything down, and this is going to be my weird existential, I promise I'm not stoned conversation, but like, when you strip everything down, it's like, what are you doing here? And I've always believed, like, I got into writing in the first place because I had like really unfortunate situation happen to me in my life. And I was scared of, you know, my name not being there forever. Mm-hmm. I was scared of if I died and people that knew me died, what happens? Like, am I just never there again? So I was like, let me try to write and hopefully one or two things that I write in my life will be there forever and my name will never die. So like, I've always wanted to create. I've always wanted to like be involved in some sort of creative process. And when I save files now at Barstool, I put my name, my Fowler inside of the MP3 file names, just so that one day, hopefully somebody's going through and they're like, who's this guy? Like, who knows? Like, I don't know. Like I'm weird like that where I believe creating is kind of the only thing we're doing here. Mm-hmm. If you're not creating something and you're not making something meaningful, then like kudos to you for finding your own form of happiness, but that absolutely could not be me.
Yeah. I love that. Like, and is there, obviously now, you know, you're building within this company. Are there parts of you that wants to create things outside of the Barstool universe or build something that's like, this is Mikey Fowler's, this is my own.
Yeah.
Like, is there part of you that still wants to do that?
For sure. And I think right. I mean, my hobbies come and go with the friggin' wind, but like for me, I think soccer is, you know, something worth exploring. I feel like I have opinions on that stuff that are a little bit out there, and I'm close with guys like Troops and Expressions and people that, you know, eventually will be at Barstool. And it's like, I don't know. I really don't know, actually, to answer your question in a long way. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know that being sub 30 and having this mindset is going to lead itself to like, you know, something again. I 6 years ago, I was thinking I was going to be a writer forever. It's like, you know, who knows when I'm 35, God forbid. I mean, God willing, I get there. I have absolutely no idea what I'll be doing. Hopefully writing again. Actually, you know, probably hopefully writing again. Did you ever write?
I did. Yeah. I was like, you know, high school newspaper type of thing. Yeah. Like had my own, you know, travel blog for a while. Like I've gone all over the map.
Do you feel like the podcasting move from writing is very normal? Because I'm starting to see it more and more and more.
Yes. 100%. Like I had this like travel blog, was interviewing people and trying to then transcribe the interview like an idiot and like write it out into like a shortened blog format. I'm like, huh, you know what I should do is just fucking hit record and put the whole thing out. Like that was, I mean, that's like no joke. That was what I, like the first four or five episodes were I had actually like blogged them out. They were like transcribed. I was like, well, this is stupid. So yes, it was a pretty easy, seamless transition.
Yeah.
I do miss writing at times too, where I'm like, you know, I'd like to go back, and there's something to be said about like actually physically writing your thoughts down.
Totally. And like, I think the podcast space is a lot of story. I mean, it's just storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. Fiction or nonfiction. And like the interview aspect of it is one thing, but like you look at those, like my favorite murder pods or like anybody that scripts stuff, Dear John, whatever, like it's just the newest form of storytelling. And as fashion, if you take fashion, for example, things come back around and get back in style.
Yeah.
So like writing will be back eventually. And like, the video will come back and then audio will come back. I don't know. You just need to be adaptable and resourceful. And like, I hope to be on the forefront of all of that forever, but I have no fucking clue.
Yeah.
I could get left in the dust. Like, I don't have a TikTok. I have no idea what's next. You have to do it, don't you?
I have a feeling that you won't be left in the dust, but yes, I feel like it is part of my, you know, I've been in the internet space now for 10 years. It's like, your job is just to be figuring out what the next thing is. Like, that is 95% of your job description is just to be like, all right, what's the next big thing? What's the next thing I should be focusing my time, money, attention on, and going from there, and then trying to learn how to do it. So like, I'm confident in that if I stay somewhere in this space, I will have no choice but to figure it out or die.
I can't believe you were the writer too. I think that's very funny. I think that's very, very interesting. Cause I think that like, when I talk about writing, why did you get into writing in the first place?
I don't know. If I think back to like early childhood, was writing, you know, I was good at it. Like, I, you know, write things in class and you get the good thumbs up from the teacher and you're like, oh, this guy kind of like, I can get down with this. And then, yeah, you know, think like love sports or thought like, oh, being a sports writer would be pretty cool. Like, and then it sort of just like starts to snowball from there.
Did you have a hero sports writer or somebody you liked and emulated?
No, not at all. Like, I like being a boss. I like Peter Gammons was somebody like that I feel like my dad liked. And so I kind of like read his stuff, but I don't think I ever really had, I remember reading some of like Jay King, like I didn't like them though. I was just like, these are the names that I knew, yeah, in like early Sports Illustrated, like some of those things, but no, I didn't have like a favorite necessarily.
That's interesting. I definitely was a fanboy. There's an article that I wrote about Grantland the day that it went under, about Brian Phillips, who was my favorite writer. And I printed out one. I was way too old to do this. I was like 24 or 5. I printed out one of his articles and brought it to the bar. I was following him on Instagram. Grantland went under that day, got destroyed. I found he posted a picture from a bar and said, we're drinking. I went to the bar and sat ambiguously in the corner with a printout of my favorite article. And I asked him to sign it at the end of the night. He was like, what the fuck is going on? And then I like panicked. And I wrote an article about how I panicked. And I wrote like what I wanted to say to you. Mm-hmm. And then he found that and then became one of my first like, you know, real mentors in the space. And
yeah,
he just like writes books now. So like, he's like not in the space at all, but like, yeah, it was super interesting. I've been romantic about writing my entire life, like, like super, super like cringeworthy romantic about writing forever. And like, I don't know. I just think that like, I've always really, really enjoyed the idea and the like romance of writing something down. I don't know. It's like, it feels lasting. It feels like permanent. I don't know. But like sports writing for me has never been as interesting to me as like creating something, like creating a world or like creating a fiction piece. But I don't know. Maybe I'll write a book one day. Have you ever tried to write a book?
I feel like I have multiple book outlines. Like there was at one point in my life where I thought I was like going to write a movie. Like there's always, you know, I feel like every writer has some sort of like, oh, I got this pilot idea and I got this. Like, it's just kind of the way it goes.
Yeah.
And some stuff sticks. Yeah. Like the podcast for me was like, it stuck. And I was like, all right, there's actually something to this. I did a travel blog for 2 years. And then I was like living in my parents' basement. I'm like, tough to write a travel blog when you're living in mom's house. And so it's like, you know, things come and go, I think.
Yeah. That's cool. Have you lived anywhere creative?
I spent a year living all over the world. So I lived in 12 cities over the course of 12 months, which was interesting. So I did Croatia, Czech Republic, Valencia, Spain, Serbia, Bulgaria, Morocco, 2 stops in Argentina, Peru, 2 stops in Colombia, and Mexico City. So that was an adventure.
Have you written about that or podcasted about that before?
I have written about that. That was like kind of the impetus for the podcast, where it was like I was meeting all these crazy people from all over the world. It was like, well, yeah, you're, and I thought I was going to do it, you know, telling their travel stories. And then it turned out Oh, well, you know, you're writing a book and you're a famous muralist in Mexico City and you're Olympic
you're
athlete.
You're the traveler.
Right. And so then I, you know, was like, oh, your stories are more interesting. I don't care about the time you got shit faced at a hostel. Like, yeah, that's funny. But, you know, it was like their business stories and their creativity was kind of the interesting piece.
That's really interesting. So you kind of like, you learned about what you were doing while you were doing it, as yeah. anybody should, really.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was a unique experience.
That's crazy. I've never been to any of the 12 places.
Highly. I mean, I won't say I highly recommend all of them, but I really do. It was Morocco maybe would be my one that I'd be like, you know, I could have done a weekend instead of 5 weeks, but that was other than
well,
that.
You being a soccer player as well, like you must've been able to use that language to get to people.
Oh yeah. Like, you know, I tried in every space to go and play soccer or to go to a soccer game and, you know, experience that part of the culture. And that's like, when they say it is the universal language, it's the universal language. Like
easiest there's, way to know anybody.
It is crazy how much it's like, okay, you've got a ball and you're a 10-year-old Moroccan kid and I pass it to you and you know what to do and pass it back. And we can have like a whole moment with that.
Yep.
It is 100% true when they say
you meet someone from Ecuador and you're like, oh, the Valencias, and they're
yeah.
like, oh
yeah,
like you can just start with anything. Yeah,
exactly.
Like if you play enough FIFA, you could talk to somebody from every country in the world.
Mm-hmm. It is very true. Like, so your love of soccer, is there, I know you played like all growing up, you still play, is there part of you that like wants to be more in that soccer space? I know, you know, there's soccer programming at Barstool, like, but is there part of that soccer world that keeps like drawing you in?
So that's the difference, right? Where it's like, part of me wants to say that I'll always be a producer, I'll always be a backside person. And then there's part of me that wants everyone in the world to hear what I have to say about Jack Wilshere. Like there's like a huge difference between like mm-hmm. being at Barstool and being like, I'm not good enough to have that show. Mm-hmm. And then in the other hand, being like, well, nobody knows anything about soccer. I will not sugarcoat it at all. There is a part of me that thinks when I watch a broadcast or something that I could do that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like, I don't think that the medium will look the same by the time I'm ready to be in there, but I do think that soccer is a space that I know as much about as I do podcasting, which is something that like I do professionally. So it's yeah. like, why wouldn't that be another alternative? So hopefully there's a way to combine those two, but I mean, there's enough soccer podcasts out there. So I'll wait and see what happens when this whole Barcelona thing's over. Cause I'm not starting anything while Eric is watching.
It's true. It's true. I mean, I will say though, I don't know, there's a couple, but in the United States, there's not too many soccer podcasts specifically that I've like fell in love with. Like they're, you know, yes, yeah. they like, if you're, I mean, I love the MLS. I love US like men's soccer, like US women's national team. Like, but I don't find there's a ton in that world.
Hold on one second. I can't hear you right this second. Do you have me back?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay, I can hear you too, but I switched it to, now I can hear you better. Okay, that's the audio guy right here, me.
Weird, yeah.
It just said my AirPods connected in my room. I don't listen to any American soccer podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to my team-specific Arsenal podcast. And like, I used to listen to Men and Blazers until I got to Barstool. Also, nobody in the soccer space likes Barstool.
Yeah.
So there's another thing where it's like, I'm never going to do it here. I'm going to have to wait my little time. But
right.
Like, as I said, I want to eventually end up in a space that excites me. Like I said, we're like never being scared of your boss, never having scaries on Sunday.
Yeah.
And the two things I really care about right now are Barstool and soccer. So, you know, like that's hopefully the next idea, but you never know.
Hopefully. I'll tell you my one other idea is to start it seems like the most ludicrous idea of all time, but to start a like men's league soccer cleat business. I'm like, there is, it would be D2C. I'm like, yes, there's the Nikes and the Adidases of the world, but I'm like, what if you just started like a poor man's men's league soccer boot company? It was like, you know, sarcastic and humorous content. Like all the shoe companies are serious, but anyway, that's my other soccer.
I don't hate that one.
That's for another time.
I was thinking like a grailed resale of old cleats, but that sounds awful too.
That could, you never know. Like I could see that working.
I mean, all I want to do in men's league is like, I still have my, I'm a Copa guy as you should be over the age of 27. I'm not wearing anything with socks. But like, I don't know. I think I'd probably be interested in some discount shoes at this point. I don't think I'm ready to spend $200 on shoes.
That's where I'm at. I'm like, I play, you know, I still play a decent amount, but spending $280 on a pair of cleats, like is a little tough.
It's never been me and it's not going to be me now.
Yeah. All right. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. So I just have a couple extra questions for you.
Have a good time.
Is there a moment or a piece of content or something that you've been involved in at Barstool or elsewhere that you're like particularly proud of that you hang that on your mantle that you're like, that is, I'm so happy to have been part of that experience.
Yeah. The 3-year Barstool Radio project. When I got there, I thought I was running the podcast network. And then Eric is like, we just signed a deal with Sirius 12 hours ago. We have you here for audio. I need you to launch this full 24-hour programming station. I had no producers, no staff, and I just come from a real radio station. So it was like, what is this going to look like? How does it work? When we went live the first day, I had to have somebody standing outside the studio listening on the app to make sure we were live. And then I had to get the talent in and out. I had to have a morning show. I had to staff everything. I had to get the vouchers. They gave me like a blank check and they were like, we need you to build this podcast, this entire radio network. And by the first day after we went off air, like we went on air, we all celebrated and went nuts. By the time we went off air, I was like hysterical. And then 3 years later, the contract ran out and we just went back to doing what we do next. But that was the most proud I've ever been of anything at this company and in my professional career, coming from a radio station and being just the social media account manager, producer, and then going to Barstool. And then within 2 months having to create a station, it was like, I just had to go off what I remembered the place looked like that I was before. It was like, I believe there was a guy doing something over there. Like what should he be doing over there? And then, so that's the most proud I've ever been. There's plenty of shows and plenty of things like that. But for me, that was 30 days into a job and a move to New York when I'd never even been, like 30 days into this adventure with a chance to prove myself. And when it worked, like, no better feeling. You know, this is going to be so weird to ask you, but like, you know, when you play a game and you score a goal and then like you're in the shower at home after, and like, you just get like you want to yell, you're so excited. Like, you're just like so proud of like what happened. Like, you're just like, fuck yeah, I actually did that. Like, that was how I felt in something professionally, which is the first time I'd ever known that like you can feel that athlete buzz doing something in your career. And I'll never forget that moment, honestly. And I've never even really said that out loud until right now, but that is how I felt when it launched. And, I that feeling of like, I like, do you ever get emotional when you watch like a team win something and then everyone's on the court, like crying or like on the field crying? I get emotional watching that. Cause you know what it takes to feel that way. And it's like, that's how I felt for like that one last time. And I thought that was done when I graduated, but like, no. So yeah, that's my one big moment. I've never launched anything with my own name on it. I imagine that must be really scary, but like, do you have any, is there an episode that made you feel like that?
I'd say I interviewed Elizabeth Beisel. She's a 3-time Olympian, 2-time Olympic medalist. She's now, you know, retired from swimming, but she did the NBC broadcast from the Olympics this summer. She's written a book. She was on Survivor. Like, she just was so kind, so nice, so impressive, and such a freakishly good athlete from such a young age. That one was, I don't know, it was probably a year ago at this point that we did that interview, and she was just somebody that was like so special. I was like, holy shit, this is why, when I don't want to churn out an episode, this is why I do this. This is what, you know, I get out of this. This is like such a special person, and I just love the chance of getting to talk to her.
That's one of those things that like you check yourself in the mirror. You're like, holy shit, I'm here. Like, that's a great feeling.
I will say there haven't been many goals in my soccer career, so I can't necessarily say I relate with that piece of your story, but you get the idea. Okay. Is there a podcast outside of the Barstool Network that you would want to produce?
Want to produce? Yeah. A super good question. I'd love one day to work with Tommy Alter, TA, who runs his own podcast network, and he's a co-host with JJ Redick on the Old Man at 3 podcast. He's always that guy that puts on all those parties when everybody's like, you see a picture and it's like like Malcolm Gladwell, PFT commenter, and Bill Simmons are at dinner, and you're like, how do they all know each other? And then Tommy just does this thing once a week where he gets all the people he knows and he brings them into a room. And then that's where creative ideas flow. And I've always wanted to work either alongside, or now that he's made his move to talent from producer, I'd love to help produce for him. It's just somebody that, again, resourcefulness has found a way to create this, like, this undescribable network of people and creatives that, you know, being around somebody like that could never be negative. There's never a way that wouldn't benefit you professionally. So that's the guy I'd want to work alongside. Hang on 1 second. I don't think I can hear you. Is your wire out? Can you do a test me again? I cannot hear you at all.
What the fuck?
Now I can hear you. I heard the what the fuck.
There we go.
Okay, we're back.
I don't know what's going on. Maybe I'm just fiddling with this mic here today.
You're back.
All right, good. All right, so I don't know where I lost you there, but my final question for you. I love the Weird Brains piece of Barstool. I think that is like such a calling card. It is so true about everybody, it seems like, who works at Barstool. But I do end every episode of Destination Different with the sign off of Stay Weird. So I now ask everybody, Mikey Fowler, what makes you weird?
The circle that's around me. I think that I'm one of those people that if I was in a boring place, I'd be a boring person. I'm one of the, like, you know, those people that kind of struggle in their early years or formative years to find identity. I still think I'm going through that. And I think that the more I'm around people that make me smile and happy and are weird, the more that I find out that I'm more weird myself. So for me, I would be a super mundane average person if I was surrounded by super mundane average people. And I think there's people in my life that would disagree with that, but I think that I could absolutely be one of those people that's trapped like that. And what makes me weird is the company I keep.
Is a wrap on this week's episode of Destination Different. Thank you to Mikey for taking the time to sit down with me on this week's show. I'm sure I manage one podcast and I can't even find the time of the day to do that. So I can't even imagine what his schedule looks like to fit in the dozens of podcasts on the Barstool Network. So very appreciative of him joining for today's show. It was awesome to get the chance to hear his story. I'm sure there are thousands upon thousands of people out there who are like, how do I get a job at Barstool? And so it was pretty fascinating to get the chance to hear how he's, you know, got his foot in the door there and then taken every single ounce out of his opportunity to grow into that role. So we should have him linked up in the description here, but if you want to follow along with Mikey, we've got him over on Instagram and Twitter in the description of the show. And that's all we got for this week. We'll be back again after the Labor Day holiday next Wednesday with another interview, another episode. There is 4 months left in 2021. We're going to make the best of it. A lot of big guests coming. A lot of exciting growth happening here at Destination Different. So with that, we'll see you next week. Hope everybody enjoys the long weekend. And stay weird.
Superpowers. We fell in love for just a couple hours. I can't tell the difference between what's fake and what's been missing. Often I'm misunderstood, so I'm looking for a better me. This is your love song, baby. I hope that you know the words. This is your love song, baby. Take time.